Jewish leaders had been allowed to carry out the decision, verse 1, that they made about Jesus, he would have been stoned. That would have messed up the whole prophecy. But see, you understand by now, you've heard me teach on this before, it's a really important thing for us to keep in our minds. God is not limited to the linear unfolding of time. He engages with us in it. He lives through your day with you in fellowship if you want to. He's right there, and it unfolds for him day by day. But he's not limited to that. And that's why prophecy is not just being a really good guesser. It's not God just saying, because I've heard people teach that. God doesn't know what's going to happen tomorrow. That's unknowable. Well, not for God. It has to do with his place in time and space. When God says such and such is going to happen, the reason that it's so accurate is because at the moment that he says that, he's watching it. He's there. The Bible says that he knows by experience the end from the beginning. So he's not stuck in time. So when God said, in great detail, this is how Messiah is going to be killed, interesting that also it even says what the onlookers and the mockers are going to say. That's really spooky. To me, that's spookier than the whole crucifixion thing, anything. That it's like God's watching the whole event, saying, okay, write this down, Mr. Psalmist. Okay, these guys over here are going to say blah, 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 blah. And of course, and it's being written down hundreds and hundreds of years before there even is such a thing. So one of those little quirks, like the Bible talking about Messiah being born in Bethlehem. But there's no way you're going to get a Jewish girl who's pregnant, you know, to ride a donkey 100 miles over rough terrain. Unless she's forced to, which she was, because Caesar had this brilliant idea that the way to get more money, Caesar just sitting home, you know, in his palatial abode, talking with his accountant, decides, let's just send everybody back to the house of their fathers, and that way we can keep an accurate census and we know how much to tax them. Just an off-the-cuff decision. Just like the Romans coming into Israel and saying, okay, well, let's give these people some power, but we don't dare let them kill and execute capital punishment because, for one thing, they'll just kill everybody. They're bloodthirsty. So there has to be some limits. All those whim, free will, choice decisions, God knew about ahead of time. And I think that is very undervalued. Especially when you look at the scriptures that talk about, we talked about this morning, about looking through the knothole in the fence at the part of your life you're seeing right now, but God sees the whole picture. Whenever he talks about the future, take note. Because he's fair. He knows what he's talking about. He's not guessing. This is why I always tell people, do not let the devil predict your future. First thing, he's a liar. And secondly, he doesn't know your future. There's only one that can predict your future, and that's the one who's been there and who knows. So I got a lot out of verse 1 there, didn't I? But it's a big deal that they made their decision. Yes, we are going to kill Jesus. Now, how do we get this show on the road? Well, we can't do it. The Romans won't let us do it. So we're going to have to get the Romans to do it. Fortunately, the most spineless Roman leader of his day was Pontius Pilate. So they dragged him before Pilate, and Pilate immediately starts sweating. Immediately, you can feel the pressure. Luke says that they led him away at daybreak. One little note, I said this the last time I taught it, and I don't know if you care about these kinds of details, but you think, why did they wait? They'd already made their decision. They'd already done it in closed quarters at night. But there was a little loophole in the law that said if you're going to have a trial, especially one that affects something involving capital punishment, you can't do it at night. It has to be in broad daylight, which is a pretty good law if you stop to think about it. But this wasn't going to be a real trial. They were just going through the motions. They just wanted to somehow make Jesus look like such a threat that spineless Pilate, who was afraid of controversy, would carry out the death sentence. And ultimately, that's exactly, it turned out to be a brilliant strategy because that's exactly what happened. So they led him away and they handed him over to Pilate. And as I said earlier, I couldn't resist, sorry. But I think that the interchange between Jesus and Pilate is so significant. It shows me so much about the way he is. He will not allow you, if you look him in the eyes, if you have an honest-to-goodness, heart-to-heart contact with Jesus Christ, he will not let you play games. He won't let you play church. He will always look you in the eyes. He'll tell you the truth. If you don't want to hear the truth, he'll tell you anyway. He just won't force you to be real, but he will be real with you. And I cannot imagine a human being trying to play games with Jesus, looking him in the eyes, and getting away with it. I just can't imagine. I would love to watch a video of this interchange. We get lots of hints in the narrative. It's like Jesus is saying, Pilate, I know the pressure you're under. I know these guys. You know them. You know what they're like. But you know I'm innocent. You don't have to make this decision. It's not a good decision for you to make. God's plan's still going to unfold. Let me read you a little thing that I wrote down. As Pilate sits down in his judgment seat to make a decision of Jesus Christ, the irony is that he himself is being judged on the basis of his response to Jesus Christ. And so too, some of you will sit back and say, I'm going to analyze and scrutinize and evaluate Jesus Christ. In reality, however, you're not judging him. But your reaction to him is judging you. Because he's the King of Kings, regardless of what you decide. He's going to have his way whether you choose to get on board or not. And thus, the judgment seat that you're occupying right now is that of your own judgment. And how you respond to him will determine whether you go to heaven or spend eternity in hell. And the dynamic of this whole thing that I see, which is why I think we need to look at it and see it for what it is one man, not the Roman Empire against Jesus Christ, one man in an awkward place who has the choice between integrity and truth, and just caving in like he's always done, making another mistake to try to save his own skin. And I think that happens a lot more. I think that happens every Sunday where the truth is being spoken. People have the choice. Do I take this seriously? Do I just go through my motion, laugh at the jokes and the interesting facts, and then walk away and never having actually responded to the question Jesus asked everybody is, who do you say I am? You know what I mean? So let's watch this interchange. I'm going to point out a few details that I think are good. The very first one, insert, is Mark just sort of jumps right in to the first question that Mark lists is, are you the King of the Jews? But there's a whole bunch that happens. John tells us in John 18 that when Pilate said, I love this, it's just right off the bat. Are we going to play games, Pilate? You're going to be real, buddy. You can't afford another mistake. You need to be real. This is an important time, buddy. And Pilate says, are you the King of the Jews? I can see him, almost see him yawning. Jesus, first thing Jesus says, John tells us, is that your own idea? Or have other people been talking to you about me? I would think that would get your attention. First of all, Pilate's used to being the guy in control. He, you know, and part of that interchange is interesting because Jesus does answer the question, but he says, "That your own idea? Look, are you even engaged here? Are you personally considering what you're about to do?" He said, "Yes, I am. Yes, I am a king, but my kingdom does not have its origins in this earth. In other words, I'm not a threat to you or your empire in the way that they are trying to make you believe." And then he says this thing that I've always found especially poignant. This is all in John's gospel. He said, "Everyone who is really on the side of truth listens to me." The impact of that is, Pilate, are you really on the side of the truth? How are you thinking about this? Are you thinking for yourself right now, Pilate? And then Pilate says, "Well, what is truth?" It's amazing. And one of the things I love about this interchange is that it still happens. I don't know if you've sat and talked to your average pagan about Jesus, but you see a lot of these same kinds of deals. "Well, I don't know if I believe in God because of," and then pick a tragedy, you know, pick some horrible thing that's happened somewhere. It's irony that people who choose to not believe in God, but every time something really bad happens, he's the one that gets blamed. It's just a convenient out, and Pilate was looking for a convenient out, and Jesus wouldn't let him do it. Verse 3 says that the chief priests accused him of many things. They had to pick their things. When they tried their own accusations about his religious claims, Pilate just said, "Well, what does that have to do with Roman law? You know, I'm not going to listen to anything that you have to say that regards your law. That's between you. You take them away and you do what you want to do on that. But this court has to do with Roman law." And of course, then they picked other things to accuse him of. And in verse 4, Pilate said to him, "Aren't you going to answer? Aren't you even going to defend yourself?" And it says that he was amazed that Jesus didn't reply. Why would he be amazed? I would think that if you're in a position of power like his, you'd be used to people groveling by now or offering you bribes or being concerned. And I just love the interchange that's next, that John tells us that Mark leaves out. Pilate says, "Don't you understand that I have the power of life and death over you? You're not taking this seriously. Don't you get it?" And Jesus says, "Don't you get it? That you would have no power whatsoever if it wasn't given to you by God. Pilate, you're not driving the bus here, buddy. That's why I'm not afraid of you. You'd have no power whatsoever." That's also a good thing to keep in mind. When you feel like everybody's driving your bus, except God, they'd have to be pretty big and bad to kick God out of the driver's seat. So Luke inserts, as I told you earlier in Luke 23, that Pilate, he heard something in the conversation that made him think he might be able to send Jesus to Herod, because apparently some of the things Jesus was accused of happened in Herod's jurisdiction, so he just passed him off like the hot potato. And Herod went through the motions, and Herod wanted to see him do a trick. "I hear you do tricks." And he didn't do a trick, and so Herod just passed him off and sent him right back to Pilate. So Pilate is like it is like the hot potato. You just threw it away, but now it's being dumped right back in your lap. And here it says that there was a custom, verse 6, the custom at the feast to release a prisoner whom the people requested. By the way, it doesn't tell you, but the custom was Pilate's idea. Pilate came up with it because it seemed to him like, here, you got everybody together. If you make some sort of a gesture, perhaps another riot won't start and you won't lose your job or your head and be sent packing by the Romans. So he was the one that came up with this little custom of releasing somebody that they choose. And all of these details, these narrative details that Mark is giving us are setting the picture, but there's some interesting things in here. A man named Barabbas was in prison, and once again, the syntax is not great in the NIV, but it's basically saying he was a murderer and an insurrectionist. He was a bad dude. That's why he was on death row. Can I just point out a couple of things that I think are noteworthy? In Aramaic, the word Barabbas, his name, means son of the father. Or if it's mockery, it could be daddy's boy. Or if it's a positive thing, if the dad's really proud, it means just like his dad. Isn't that interesting? Barabbas, son of the father, just like his dad. So the other Gospels, Mark seems to indicate that the people came and asked Pilate to do for them what he usually did, but the other Gospels say that it was Pilate that brought up the suggestion. Maybe he made it sound like it was their idea. He's just trying to get rid of Jesus. So we said, do you want me to release this guy? You know our little deal that we do every Passover where I release somebody at the feast as a gesture of goodwill between Rome and you, our friendly people that we serve and that we love. You want me to release him? And they said they wanted Barabbas, and some of them said yes. You have to remember that this crowd isn't a crowd filled with people that love Jesus. This is the kind of crowd that you saw in the CNN coverage of the rebels stirring up in Tripoli, in Libya, where it was trying to show that there are actually vast quantities of people who actually love Muammar Gaddafi. And here, we'll show you pictures of some of them. And there's like 10 people. And they're saying, in whatever language, they're saying, yes, we love Muammar Gaddafi. We condemn all of these mean, nasty rebels. And what you don't see, and they keep glancing off to the side. And what you don't see off to the side is the guy with the machine gun who's saying, okay, now look happy. Look like you love your government. You know, that's what this crowd was. This was a crowd of rabble that were gathered together. There were hundreds of thousands of people in Jerusalem who loved Jesus. Those guys weren't invited to this proceedings. Pilate doesn't know all of the dynamics, but it says here he knew that it was out of jealousy that Jesus was even brought before him. He probably knew they wanted him dead. He just didn't want to cave into it. And it may be that he just thought that if he appeals to the crowd and lets it be the crowd's decision. Look, you know what I do every year? I let them have their choice, and they chose. I'm sorry, it's out of my hands. The crowd wanted Jesus released. Maybe he thought the crowd felt differently about Jesus than the chief priests did. It was an excellent opportunity. Spineless opportunity, you know, to avoid having to make a fair judicial decision. But it would have gotten him out of the picture. But then verse 11 tells us that the religious leaders convinced the crowd to demand that Barabbas. I wrote this phrase down. I still find the word so poignant. And this is my first rabbit trail of the day. Verse 11. But the chief priest stirred up the crowd to have Pilate release Barabbas instead. So here you've got the poster child for the kind of person Rome wants to get rid of. He's a murderer. He's in jail for being a rebel and a ringleader. Exactly the kind of guy that Rome would like to snuff out. And here you've got a guy who said, I'm no threat to you. I'm not a political leader. You've examined me. I haven't done anything wrong by law. You sure you want to do this, Pilate? Are you thinking about what you're doing? You've got a choice between these two people. And once again, it does tell us that if you look at all four Gospels, Pilate really seemed to have a conscience about this, and this really troubled him. Not enough to make him make the right decision. I find it so amazing that how involved God was in this whole process of giving Pilate a chance to do the right thing. But here's my first rabbit trail. It has to do with the strange bedfellows of politics. I always use the example of the National Organization of Women supporting Bill Clinton as to the things that people will allow in order to avoid having to be accountable to the truth they don't want to be accountable to. Strange bedfellows. Politics, you know, that he should have been the poster child for everything that that organization stands for. Of hatred against. I've read their literature. I mean, how many charges of harassment did he have against him? And yet they supported him. Why? What's the point of your political statement? Well, the reason they did is because the alternative was even more distasteful. So we'll support this, even though this is exactly what we've stated, we don't believe it, but we'll support this because if we don't, the alternative to this is something that is going to tell us what we don't want to hear, and it's going to be even worse. You know people like this. I know people like this. They'll compromise with the truth. They'll compromise with Jesus. And trade enslavement. Or danger, or which amounts to their own rule, they'll exchange that for being accountable to God and God's loving rule. It's amazing. It's amazing what people will embrace rather than to embrace God. We see it every political confrontation that we have. I always find the primaries to be so frustrating. Because in the primaries, the people who are vying, in certain political party especially, people who are vying for the nomination rip each other to shreds. This person is Adolf Hitler, you know. And I mean, they just badmouth them and rip them until one of them wins the nomination. And now they're just the best buddies, and now they have nothing but nice things to say. Why? Did they not believe those first things that they said? Well, you know, sort of. But now the alternative is we got to get our guy elected so the other guys don't get elected, and it just stinks. It's silly and it's frustrating, but I tell you, when it happens spiritually, I can't believe the stuff people will swallow spiritually because they don't want to believe in a God who makes them accountable. I was having dinner in the Thai restaurant in Damariscotta the other day, which I won't give you the name, but it is very, very good. And I eat there almost every day, but I have no life, so. But the last few days, there's some kind of a big New Age thing happening in the area, and so I was sitting in tables with people who are talking about whatever the latest New Age thing du jour is, and I thought, you know, it's interesting that I know some of these people. Some of these people have flatly and roundly rejected as absolutely preposterous the whole thing that Christianity claims. And the stuff they believe is just silly. It's not logical. They haven't followed it through all the way sometimes. If you wanted to sit down at that table, they would prove how open-minded they are by letting you talk about sacrificing chickens and every form of sexual deviation possible, and you know, aliens from outer space, you name it. They'll sit there and they'll, you know, aliens from there and name you, sit there and they'll prove how open-minded they are. Talk about you, say, Jesus Christ. Have you talked about Jesus Christ of the Bible? Well, you know, some of you have done that.